Well, this week is Thanksgiving. And what a good time for us to study about contentment. I'm going to be looking at 1 Timothy chapter 6, particularly verse 6, but we'll look at the whole section there from verses 3 through 10. One has to wonder, is there anyone in our society who is content? Contentment seems to be something that has been lost. And many people don't even want to have contentment anymore. They don't even recognize it as being a worthwhile goal. They're simply in life for the pleasures it brings. And as soon as one pleasure is over, they want to start the next pleasurable thing. As Christians, we have to have a different worldview. We have to realize that we are not here on this earth to enjoy the physical pleasures of life, but rather to receive the spiritual gifts of God. And ultimately, of course, the ultimate gift, the gift of eternal life. But we have to make some changes in our lives while we're here on this earth to attain those goals. As an illustration of just how anti-content might be a better description of our society, but our society is not content, and as an example of that, have we noticed this year that Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year, supposedly, is going to start on Thursday. It's going to start Thanksgiving Day this year. Many of the retailers, not content to open up on Friday morning at 3 in the morning, or 6 in the morning, or 9 in the morning, certainly. No, we have to open up Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening. We've got to catch people right away and get them in here shopping. And the fact that millions, and you may be one of them, who are going to be waiting at the doors for the doors to open so they can burst in and get those great deals, indicates that they also are not content with what they have in their life. And they think somehow that by getting that special bargain on a Christmas present for someone else or possibly for themselves, that will somehow make them feel better. But these things in this world will never bring contentment or happiness. 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning in verse 3. If anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which accords with godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, reviling, evil suspicions, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds, and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. From such, withdraw yourself. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Paul has a lot to say in that short section on that topic of contentment. Being content. Let's consider what ultimately causes the problem of not being content. the real source of that problem is loving the world. Do not love the world. 1 John 2:15 through 17. John says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever." I mean, they start really young. The commercials on TV for the little children's cartoon shows, they show them all these wonderful toys. They want them to lust with their eyes over those toys so that they'll bug mom and dad to buy those toys for them. Because now they know that a 2-year-old has no money. So why are they advertising all of these $100 toys on a little cartoon program for 2-year-olds? It's pretty simple, isn't it? 2-year-old wants it and cries and throws a fit and bugs mom and dad, and mom and dad have the money and go get it. That's the plan. It starts so early, and they push us, love these things. Oh, if you just had this one more toy, you'd be happy. If you just had this one more item of clothing, you'd be happy. If you just had this one more appliance, you'd be happy. If you just had this car instead of the one you've got, you'd be happy. And it's a lie. It's all a lie. And yet they start out wanting us, they show it to us, and they show us how great it is, and they want us to want it. And it's working. Amazing as it is, considering the supposed downturn in the economy, I mean, the past 3 or 4 years we've been having all the recession and unemployment's up and all these things, and yet this year, Christmas spending is supposed to go up 4%. How's it going to go up 4%? Where are people getting this money? Well, they're not. They don't have it. But they've got to buy it. Got to have it. Because we love those things of the world, so we got to go out and spend money we don't have to impress people we don't like. We do these things all the time. In fact, one study showed that the average person in America is going to spend $140 not on Christmas gifts for everyone on their list, not even for their family. They're going to spend an average of $140 on a gift for themselves this year. Kind of misses the point of the giving season, doesn't it? But that shows again how when we become lovers of this world and the things in this world, we're not content. We're not content with the gifts other people give us. We have to go buy ourselves one. We need to think about the direction that the world is pushing us and realize that as Christians, we don't have to go the way the world goes. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't buy anybody any Christmas presents. But we have to recognize that those Christmas presents that the grandkids just, last year had to have, where are they now? Sitting in a closet? Out in the garage? Broken and in the trash? Where are they? You see, the things of this world don't last. And if we love this world and the things of this world, there will be joy on Christmas Day, and then there will also be some misery because somebody didn't get what they wanted, and so they're mad. I know it's too early to think about Christmas. It's only Thanksgiving. So let's think about Thanksgiving. Somebody will be mad because so-and-so didn't fix the dish that they really liked. They wanted that particular dish. So-and-so will be mad because they didn't get to sit down and watch the football game. Somebody will be mad because either their hunting trip got cut short or they didn't get to do, there's going to be something, even on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe the biggest grumbling and griping day of the year. It's supposed to be the day of Thanksgiving. And yet people will grumble and complain, is lunch not ready yet? I'm starving. We got to eat something. Oh, this is burnt. This has not got enough salt in it. There'll be complaints round and round. Well, maybe it'll be different at your house. I hope so. Of course, having one day to be thankful to God isn't enough, is it? For all the things He's done for us. But we're not to love the world or the things of the world, because if we do, we're going to be miserable. We're not going to have true happiness. Proverbs 30 and verse 8 says that we are to ask for neither poverty nor riches. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me. We're all for that no poverty part, aren't we? Don't want to be poor. But boy, all those rich guys, I'd be happy if I had twice as much as I've got. Well, the problem is when you get that twice as much, then you'll still want twice as much. The eyes of a man are never content. They're never satisfied. There's never enough. When's enough enough? When's it enough money? Never is. Find these folks, no matter how much they make, they still want to make a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. What about being content with our wages? Luke 3:14, the soldiers came and asked John the Baptist, "What shall we do?" They said to them, "Do not intimidate anyone or accuse them falsely, and be content with your wages." Are we content with our wages? Or are we always wanting more? Now I know, I live in this world too, I have to pay bills too. I know that expenses keep going up. Gas prices, milk prices, meat prices, electricity prices, insurance prices. I know they keep going up and up. And I understand there's a desire to be able to keep pace with inflation. But so many times, we just want more so we can spend more. Kind of like the government. We want to get more money so we can spend more money. And a lot of people in the United States, when they do get a raise, they get a $200 a month raise and go out and celebrate by buying a new car that's got a $300 a month payment on it. Doesn't help, does it? Kind of go in the wrong direction. But that's because haven't learned to live within our means, haven't learned to be content with what we have, and we always think that happiness is just over the next hill, just after the next purchase, just after the next raise or promotion or on and on. Happiness is just always just out of reach. And it's right there, almost. But we'll never get it chasing it like that. The opposite of contentment, of course, is greed or covetousness. Colossians 3, 5 through 6 tells us to put to death those things. One of those things listed there is covetousness, which is idolatry. Now I assume most of us here this morning don't have any little statues in our house that we bow down to and burn incense to and make sacrifices to. I don't imagine we do. But you know, covetousness and greed, wanting things, those things can become our God. That can be just as much idolatry as actually bowing down to a little statue of some kind. But we try to ignore that because we like our stuff. We got to beware. Hebrews 13:5 says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness, be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. God warns us about covetousness. Jesus warned about covetousness. What a danger it was. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions, he said. And yet, how do we measure people? The Forbes 500. Who has the most? The richest man or woman. The company with the highest value. That's what we look at. Money and possessions. And yet Jesus said that's not what's important. That's not true success. That's not truly something to strive for. And yet, when was the last time you saw somebody on the front of Time or Newsweek or one of those other news magazine type magazines, or even something like Sports Illustrated or something like that, that wasn't rich and famous, or rich or famous? When was the last time they put on there the 89-year-old man who's lived with his same wife for 65 years and has raised his children and his grandchildren to be good law-abiding citizens and faithful to their spouses? And where's that man on the front of Time as the man of the year? He never gets on there, does he? Because he's not rich. He's not famous. But he's successful. As Christians, we need to redefine success and redefine our goals. And when we redefine our goals, we'll be able to have contentment in the physical realm because of the contentment that comes in the spiritual realm. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, "The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil." All kinds of evil can come as a result of that love of money. Now, it's not the money itself that's evil. Money's never done anything. It's just a piece of paper or a coin. It doesn't do anything until somebody uses it as a tool to do something. Now, let me tell you, for all the gun control advocates in the world, money's much more dangerous than guns. Money has killed far more people than guns. If you want to control something, control that money. Money's dangerous if it's not used wisely. If it's not used with a good, godly attitude. So what is the source of contentment? It's not stuff. We've seen that already. Contentment comes through Christ. First of all, in Philippians 4, verses 11 through 14, Paul says, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Nevertheless, you have done well that you shared in my distress." Now, you know, that verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." We've heard that one before, haven't we? Oh, that's been used in all sorts of areas of life. But where does Paul use it? See, sometimes we pull that thing out of its context and we talk about being able to do any number of things. Well, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. What about being content? That's what Paul's talking about. I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Doesn't matter if I'm poor or rich. Doesn't matter if I'm hungry or full. Doesn't matter if everything's great or if I'm suffering. I can be content because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So you can't learn to be content by yourself. You can't learn to be content, and you can't have contentment without Christ. I can do it through Christ who strengthens me. Paul could not have been content without Christ strengthening him. And you can't either. And I can't either. We can't do it on our own. We have to leave the world and our own fleshly desires behind and come to Christ for contentment. God brings us contentment. Hebrews 13:5 that we read a moment ago, He said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Cars, money, retirement funds, houses, even spouses sometimes, children, parents. Sometimes they leave you. But God said, I never will. We can't be content with temporary circumstances. But we can be content if we have a permanent circumstance. If we depend on God and we know He's never going to leave us, then we can be content. We don't have to be worried all the time. We don't have to be striving to get more or get better, get closer. We've got Him. He'll never leave us. Now, of course, we know we can leave Him. But if we're content having Him, we'll never leave Him either. We'll be content to be with Him and have Him be with us. The fear of God also brings contentment. Proverbs 19 and verse 23. The fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it will abide in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. Are you satisfied? Now there's an opposite to that. The prophets talked to a group of people, the Israelites, who weren't satisfied. And he talks about, one of the prophets talks about that, and he says, you know, you take your money and you put it in a bag that has holes in it, so it falls out. He says, you're sleeping on a bed that's too short for you and you can't get comfortable. Your covers are too short and they won't cover you. You ever had a blanket that was too short? You know, and if you pull it up here, then your feet are sticking out. And if you cover your feet, then you're cold up here on the shoulders. And you ever had a blanket like that? It's not satisfying. And he said, there's your problem. They've been chasing all of these illusions of happiness and all of these false religions out there. And they weren't happy. They weren't satisfied. Their crops, they'd eat, and they were still hungry for something. You ever had that happen? You ever eat and you're full? I mean, stuff, but you're still hungry? They had that happen. They made money, but they weren't satisfied with it. It just slipped through their fingers. Why? Because they didn't have God. They didn't have the fear of God in their lives. The fear of God brings satisfaction. You see, contentment is better than so many things. It's better than riches. Proverbs 17:1 says, better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. Remember that Thanksgiving Day. Just a little morsel will be better with quietness than a big old feast with a lot of strife. Proverbs 15, 16, and 17, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted calf with hatred. Or a fatted turkey either, or a fatted ham. You name it. Psalm 37 and verse 16, a little that is a righteous man, a little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. Proverbs 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. Ecclesiastes 4:6, better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. Ecclesiastes 5:12, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. Contentment's better than all the riches in the world. Jesus asked, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? You can't be content, no matter how much you have. What good is it? Contentment is better than wandering desire. Ecclesiastes 6, 7 through 9. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Solomon says there in verse 9, better is what you can see and what you have already than desiring everything everybody else has got out there. The wandering desire. That wandering desire will make you miserable. You know, you got the iPhone 4, but you need the iPhone 5. You get the iPhone 5, the iPhone 6 will come out. Or, you know, you get a car that's a year old and you need one that's new, and then by the time you get that new one, then 6 months later it's a year old and you have to have another new one. And, you know, it's never ending. There's always some new thing that we've got to have. There's always a new food product. There's always a new something. Contentment is better than strength also. Proverbs 16:19. Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Doesn't matter how strong you are, you're never strong enough physically to grab hold of contentment. It'll slip through your fingers no matter how strong your grip is. Because it's not something that can be attained physically. Godliness with contentment is great gain. There are four reasons that godliness with contentment is great gain here in 1 Timothy 6 that are given. First of all, we can't take it with us. Verse 7. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. There are a lot of people who'd like to try, but the old saying goes that you never see a U-Haul following a hearse. You can't take it with you. Now, there was one man who tried before he died. He had $300,000. And so he went to his lawyer, his preacher, and his doctor. And he gave each of them $100,000 and said, when I die and they bury me, I want you to throw this in the casket with me. I want you to put this money in there, so that I can have it with me. So they were standing around after the funeral was over, these three, and they were talking, and the doctor said, you know, I have to confess, I didn't put the whole $100,000 in there. He said, you know, I could update some things in my medical practice, get some new equipment that would help me treat people better, and so I kept $10,000 back, and I only put $90,000 in there. The preacher said, you know, since you've confessed that, I have to confess too. He said, I didn't put all mine in there either. He said, you know, I was going to put the whole thing in there, but then I got to thinking, you know, that much money could do so much good for so many people. Thought about the missionaries that could be supported or the hungry that could be fed. So I kept $50,000 of it out to use for those noble purposes and only put $50,000 in. They both looked at the lawyer, and the lawyer just looked at them in stunned shock on his face. And he said, I cannot believe the two of you. How could you be so untrustworthy to your friend? I want you to know that I put every last penny of that money he gave me in the casket, and if he ever cashes the check, he can have it. He won't cash that check, though, will he? Because you can't take it with you. And so why do we attempt to accumulate so much that's just going to have to be left behind? We want to save some for retirement. I understand that. We want to give some as an inheritance to our children or grandchildren. And I understand that. Of course, sometimes, how often are those inheritances that are left behind for those children or grandchildren the cause of strife and hatred amongst the family members? How often is it wasted and destroyed? It's one of the things Solomon bemoaned. He said, no matter how wise you are, no matter how much you've built up stuff, you don't know what the man you leave it to is going to wind up being a fool. And oh, how right he was. His son Rehoboam took a kingdom and lost 10/12 of it in 3 days. Probably would have lost the rest if the rest would have had somewhere to go. But he lost the majority in 3 days. He did that. We can't take it with us. Necessities are sufficient, he says in verse 8. Having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. Now, I challenge you sometimes. Just try for a week. I bet you can't do it. I bet you can't for 1 week be content with nothing but food and clothing. And of course, with food comes water. Don't want you to go a week without drinking some water. Okay, but you know, food and water and clothing. We'll even let you have shelter. That's not even mentioned here. But we'll let you stay in the house. But can you imagine? Can you imagine trying to live for 1 week with just those few things, the so-called necessities of life, without electricity, without a car, without a phone, without TV or computer or... Wow. You see, those are supposed to be blessings above and beyond what we need, and yet most of us feel like we've got to have those things or we can't live. Can't live without them. But they're luxuries, according to the Bible. And then he says in verse 9, the desire for riches ensnares people. People are ensnared by the desire for riches. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. They fall into these get-rich-quick schemes because they want to be rich. But they don't want to work to be rich. They just want to be rich. So they try to get rich quick and it messes them up. And then, of course, the love of money brings sorrow. Verse 9, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare. Verse 10. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. The love of money brings sorrow not only in this physical world but eternally if it causes us to stray away from the faith. And many, he says, have done that. There are some who have strayed from the faith because they loved money more than God. We have to be constantly vigilant of that. We have to constantly ask ourselves about every penny that goes through. Am I managing this for God or am I greedily hanging on to this for self? We have to remember it's not ours. It's God's. But you know, one without the other is a great loss. Godliness without contentment, we're missing something. Contentment without godliness, we're missing something. The two go hand in hand. We need them both to be truly successful in this life. There are people who, generally speaking, are godly people, but they're not content, and they miss out on so many of the blessings that God has to offer them. And there are other people who seemingly are worldly people, but they seem to be content, but they don't have godliness, and so they miss out on ultimately some of the true blessings, the spiritual blessings. Matthew 6 and verse 24, Jesus said, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Ecclesiastes 5:10 says, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. Ecclesiastes 1. The preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities. It's all vanity. It's all a waste of time. The pursuit, the rat race, being a gerbil in a wheel. That's what it really is when we're out there to pursue physical things. It's a sadness. He says all these things, just go, you get that money, you just have to give it to somebody else, and that person has to give it to somebody else, and it's not a constant. It's not lasting. Countries rise and fall. The wind goes here and there. The water goes to the sea, and then it rains on it. And it just over and over again. And there's no constancy for us. He just says over and over again in chapter 1, and really throughout most of the book of Ecclesiastes, what a sorrowful thing it is to try to be one thing without the other. Whether you're trying to be godly and yet you're not content, you can't accomplish that task. You'll never succeed at being godly without contentment. Whether you're trying to be content without godliness, you'll never succeed at that. It won't work. So he draws the conclusion. Two things, he says. God wants us to enjoy life. In fact, Jesus said, I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. But He didn't mean by that we have more stuff and more money. That's not the abundant life. Ecclesiastes 3:12-13, he says, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. To be able to enjoy your labor and to be able to eat and have what you need from that labor, that's a gift. That's a blessing. And to rejoice in that. But then he also says in conclusion, Ecclesiastes 12:13-14, fear God and keep His commandments. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. The whole thing. This is man's all. This is man's purpose on earth. Fear God and keep His commandments. God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it's good or evil. God will judge everyone about everything. So fear Him and keep His commandments. That brings us contentment. These other things never can, never will. Wholeheartedly sacrificing yourself to the Lord, giving yourself over to Him, that'll bring happiness. If you're holding back this morning, you'll never be content that way. You'll never be happy that way. And holding back from God can cause you to lose your soul as well. Not only unhappiness in this life, but unhappiness in the world to come. What's holding you back from obeying Him today? If you're not a Christian, why not? What is keeping you from believing on Jesus Christ, from repenting of your sins, from being buried with Him in baptism to wash your sins away? What's stopping you? Why are you holding back? If you've become a Christian, but perhaps in some area you're holding back, perhaps in the area of things, you're still trying to hold on to this world and its goods, let go. Let God have control of you and everything that you have. Be freed from greed. If you're here and you have a need to respond to God's invitation, please do so if you stand and sing.